Good morning. How is everyone? Good. Jeopardy. The only thing I can think of with Jeopardy is Will Ferrell playing, Sean Connery? That's the only thing I think of. No, they didn't call me. But welcome. Throughout this series, if you've been here the past couple weeks, Scott Pontier, our lead pastor, since he's gone on sabbatical, I feel like I need to bring him up every once in a while. And what he would do is he would talk about these other pastors. He would talk about Tanner Smith and Greg Vandermeer, Tim Wilson. They're all pastors at our other Harbor churches, other campuses. And one of the things that he always talks about is how great Tanner is. And I completely agree with him. That's not what the sermon's about, but I just want to say that so Tanner hears it. But Tanner, he was telling this story. He was in high school. And when he was in high school, he had this crush on this girl, Lisa. And they were living out in Iowa at the time. And Lisa, apparently, this is completely rare in Iowa. Like, you just don't hear this. But she was a vegetarian. I didn't know that everybody ate meat there. But she was a vegetarian. And Tanner had this huge crush. So what does Tanner do? He's like, I need to come up with a way to have her notice me. I'm going to become a vegetarian. And it's like, really? And if I was a friend of his at that point, I'd be like, dude, your game has to improve. Like, you don't do that. Like, that's not something that you should be doing. And he has this brilliant plan. They're sitting around this the lunch table, and it's Lisa and other friends. And he's like, this is the moment. This is the moment that I'm going to drop the bomb. And he tells everybody there that he's a vegetarian. And apparently this Lisa was like peeling an orange, and she just stopped and looked. And he was like, who just did it? This guy. I just made her like me. And he was so excited, he takes a bite of his chili that has meat in it. And that was the end of Lisa and Tanner as we know it. That was the end. I guess she looked on in horror like she had never seen anything scarier at that moment. But I think that's true. Like, we fall into these habits that we have. It's hard to break free of those, right? The truth is that we all develop these ruts from following these paths over and over again. I think for some of us, it might be going to a gym. You purchase this membership at Snap Fitness for $35. You're like, this is the moment. This is the moment that everything changes. And then all of a sudden, 2 months go by, and you're like, why am I spending money on this? That I'm never going to this place. Or it could be a diet. You change your meal. You have this food. You go and buy all this food, and you realize it's just riding in there because you fall right back. And I think that's true of us, right? And today, what I want to look at is when we develop those ruts, when we follow those paths from going over and over again, does it actually change us, right? That's the question I have, is do we actually let our defining moments change us? And throughout this series, we've talked about defining moments, right? Some of these moments are just moments. But other moments that we have, they have the absolute power to change everything, right? And so if you've been here over the past few weeks, what you've heard us talk about are two Greek words, right? Kairos and Chronos. Chronos, they had these words for moments. And Chronos was just this chronological time, right? It was the calendar moments. It was just the measurement of time, that tick, tick, tick. But they also talked about Kairos. And Kairos moments, those are the moments that we've been talking about, those defining moments, those moments that actually mean something. And those Kairos moments, for us, like, that's the type of moment that we've been grasping onto, right? It's the moment when God tries to get our attention, when God interrupts, and when God speaks. And if you remember, Scott would put this diagram up on the screen, and I changed it a little bit. So you look. Listen, we're going to miss Scott, right? He's going to be back, so I figure I'm going to put his face up on the screen every once in a while, so when he does come back, we'll recognize him. But so you have the chronos, that straight line is that chronos, but what you see here is this kairos moment. That's the defining moment. That sets you into a different trajectory, right? And that, I feel like that's what we need to really look at. Some of those moments for us, some of those moments are when you receive a phone call from a doctor, when you have a child. Other moments are when you take a step and decide to lead high school ministry at Jamestown Harbor Church, like Carol Copenall did. And I agree. So I had lunch with Carol this week, and I hadn't really known Carol all that well. But I had lunch with her, and I remember getting in the car after we had just had that lunch and saying, and just like how impressed I was with her. And not just impressed with her, but how God intervened, how God got her attention, how God spoke to her. And so rather than me tell you about this, Kara, would you come up? Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Come on over. Sorry, I just met you over there. I know it's so bright, isn't it? All right. So I wanted them to hear your story. And can you tell us how long you've been in kids ministry?
Yeah. So I, in high school, was doing kids ministry. And then I got into student ministry my sophomore year of college. So actually this coming year would have been my ninth year doing student ministries with Fairhaven and Harbor Churches.
And so just a quick story. As soon as she decided to take this, I got so many calls and just comments of saying, "You're taking Carol? Like, really? This is from Fairhaven staff, so that's how highly they think of you."
It's embarrassing.
Listen, I know, but I'm going to do that to you. But can you tell us a little bit about why you decided to do that, why you decided to take that step?
Yeah, actually, it was a really tough decision for me. It took a long time for me to come to that actual decision. And so I had been kind of mulling it over for a while, talking to different groups of people. I had people pulling me one way and people pulling me the other way. And so sometimes if I was leaning one way, I'd go to that other group and be like, okay, why should I do it? You know, and give everybody's opinion. But we were sitting here in Easter Sunday, and Scott was talking about defining moments and taking that next step. And I just felt this peace come over me, and I looked across the congregation, and I saw all of the students that were in, potential students, you know, whether in elementary school, high school, and I thought to myself, okay, we've got people at Fairhaven, which is where I'm a leader, or was a leader. We've got people fighting for those kids, but we need somebody here at Jamestown to fight for these kids, and I wanted to be that person to be able to fight for them, so, it was kind of like this whirlwind of emotions, and I don't even really remember anything else that Scott said after that, because I was just like, ah. But I went home.
We all think that, by the way, when Scott says something, we're all like, ah.
Right. But I went home that day, and I just felt complete peace, and it was just like I knew that this is where I was supposed to be, and I knew that this is where God was calling me to.
That's so awesome. Mm-hmm. And the story I love is that when you were, we needed help on teardown during Easter, and so you and your husband, Chris, decided to help out, and that's when you had a conversation with KJ.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so I don't know if he's here, so I'm sorry if I'm embarrassing him.
Don't worry, we'll do it all the time.
But we knew it was Easter, and we knew that there was a lot of people who wanted to go and be with their families, and we live around town, and it's just my family that we had to go visit. So we decided to help clean up, and I just happened to be taking down some of these lights with KJ and having a conversation with him, and that really did seal the deal of, like, he was talking about, again, I'm sorry if I'm embarrassing, but he was talking about how he doesn't have a youth group that he goes to, and he's kind of looking for that next thing, and that just really solidified me, and I that whole fighting for the students is what really started to speak to me. Of like, I've got to fight for kids like this who don't have anything, who need a place to belong, and have that comfort zone, because even as a leader, being in youth ministries is really that place that I was able to feel like I belong and can be my weird, awkward self, and so mm-hmm. I want to provide that for students as well. So.
That's awesome. And as we talk about defining moments, it would have been really easy for you to fall right back into that same old routine at Fairhaven. But then what you started to notice is God was getting your attention mm-hmm. with where he wanted you next. And so the fact that you didn't just do that, I'm really proud. And I'm excited because she's amazing. What can we do to help you, support you through this?
Yeah, we are looking for volunteers to help us. Whether you feel like you're called to be a leader, we're going to meet every other Sunday night, so it's not a huge time commitment, but I'd love to talk to you about that. We're looking for, I know Mackenzie's out here too, we're looking for host homes because we don't have a building. We meet here, and so we got to find a place for us to be able to meet as a youth group. And if that's something you're thinking about or you're on the fence, I'd encourage you to just come to one night of Youth Week and see what it's like. Come to a night, come to during the day. It's a really great way to be able to understand in a really intense way what youth ministry is like.
That's awesome. All right, let's all thank Carol. Thank you. Good job. So that's what we're going to talk about, is exactly what Carol did, where she stepped out of that path, right? We developed these ruts from following that same path over and over again, and Carol didn't. She actually leaned into where she felt God was calling her. Last week, what Scott was talking about in the defining moment was these miraculous moments, these moments that when you notice them, it changes you, right? And he talked about, the story that he was talking about was in John, and it was about Peter and the disciples. They were on the boat, and Jesus was on the shore, and he tells them, throw your nets to the other side of the boat. They weren't catching any fish at the time. They catch the fish, and that's when John notices it's Jesus, right? So we're going to pick up in that story. And what I want to set the stage for you is these disciples, okay, so they're on the boat. They've already seen Jesus on the shore. This isn't the first time that they've seen Jesus, right? They have already experienced Jesus' teachings, the miracles, the crucifixion, the resurrection. They've experienced all these things. They've experienced a whole lot of Jesus, right? But what did they do afterwards? That's what I want to take a look at, right? So go with me to John 21, verse 1 through 3. And it says, afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them. And they said, we'll go with you. So they went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. So let me get this straight. You just experienced Jesus on levels that nobody in the world has ever experienced. You experienced these miracles. You've seen everything. And what do? You go back to fishing. Like, are you kidding me? That's what they decide to do, is go back to fishing. They just experienced, their world is just flipped upside down, and they went back to fishing. And for some of us, we might look at that and say, there's no way I would do that. There's no way I would go back to the mundane, the normal way of life. I just experienced Jesus. There is no way I can go back to that. But is that true? How many of us have had that mountaintop experience? And all of a sudden, a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, and you go right back, right? We develop these ruts from following that same path over and over again. And here's a little fun fact for you. Peter, his job was fishing, right? But yet, there isn't any mention in the Gospels about Peter actually catching any fish, which sounds a lot like friends of mine, right? Mark, and I don't know if he's here. Okay, we'll move on from there. But that to me shows he might have been just a lousy fisherman, but he went back to fishing. He went back after experiencing all these miracles. And I wonder what it would look like, right, if Peter had responded differently, right? But the fact is that he didn't. And so you see, the thing for us is that these Kairos moments, they have the power to change everything. Only if we actually let them, though. Because it's easy for us to go back. It's easy for us to fall in these ruts that we're in. They're deep. And sometimes we just fall right back into them. About 10 years ago, my wife and I, Fallon, we were going to a church out in Holland. And we had this passion to help foster kids. It's been a real passion of Fallon's. And so there was a woman that we went to church with. Her name's Wendy, and she started this Mosaic organization that helps foster kids. And so we met up with her, and we were really excited. And she's like, come to this event with us. There's an event where you just get to know kids and hang out with them. And she's like, it's in my barn. And you might be thinking, like, all right. I was at least thinking, it's in a barn? But I go there, and this thing was legit. It had pool tables, ping pong tables, pool, I mean, you name it. Basketball hoops, arcade games. And so we're hanging out, and I just clicked. There were like 20 to 25 kids. And I just clicked with this kid named Trey. And Trey was going into high school, and we were playing pool. And I couldn't let him win. That's a guilt that I have, but I couldn't do that. It's a pride thing. But I just remember as we were on our way home, Fallon and I were talking. I'm like, who makes him feel valued? Who makes him feel loved? Where does he belong? And we prayed about it. And a couple weeks later, we went to another event. This was at a bowling alley. And there were about 20 to 25 kids. Trey wasn't there, but I just clicked with this other kid. And he and I were playing that racing game, you know, where you're racing against him. And he's in middle school, so, I can't let him win because he doesn't have a license yet. And so we're playing, and at the end of the day, before he leaves, he says to me and my brother love hanging out with you, or with you guys. And I said, oh, which one's your brother? And he said, no, he's not here. And I said, what's his name? Trey. And it gives me goosebumps. You mean to tell me that out of the 40 to 50 kids that on different occasions, that the two that I click with are brothers, and they're not there at the same time? And guess what I did with it? Nothing. I didn't follow up. Over the past 10 years, this has been one of the biggest regrets I have had in my life. I have wept about it. I have carried this guilt and this shame of not acting on this. It's been really tough, and I'm wondering, are there moments that you have right now that you're sitting there carrying around this guilt and this shame? And if there is, I just want you to know that it's not that I don't want you to sit in that wallow. God doesn't want you to sit in that wallow in that, right? But when you feel that, when you have these defining moments that come up, the question I have is, where does it cause you to go? Does it cause you to go back to your ordinary life, to the mundane, to that rut that comes up because you follow that path over and over again? Or does it cause you to lean in, to trust? All right, so that's kind of where we see Peter, right? That's what's going on with Peter and his disciples. They go back into that rut. They go back to fishing. But here's the thing. So they just experienced miracles. They're fishing now. They go back, and this is what I love about the story. Jesus shows up at that time. Jesus shows up when they start experiencing this ordinary, this rut that they go back into. That's when Jesus showed up to them. And at that time, what John's recognizing with Peter is that, he recognizes that Jesus is on the shore, right? And what Peter does there, they're about 100 yards away from the shore. What Peter does is he actually dives into the water. He can't wait anymore. Peter dives into the water to go see Jesus because he doesn't want to waste any more time. And we pick up there when they land on the shore. It says, when they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you have just caught. Okay? And what I want to point out here is where this encounter between Peter and Jesus takes place. If we look back in John 18, where Peter denies knowing Jesus, notice where they are at that point, right? In John 18, it says, it was cold, and the servants and officials stood around a fire they had made to keep warm. Jesus was also was standing with them, warming himself. Okay? So in these two passages, fire is mentioned. And the word that's actually used for fire here is called anthrakia. And anthrakia means charcoal fire. So you mean to tell me that out of the only two mentions in John's gospel, he mentions the word charcoal fire, not like this general fire or a wood fire, it's specific. And I'm reading this story and it clicks. It's, why does he mention that? I mean, who doesn't love the smell of fire, right? You have these scents that bring you right back. Smoke sticks with you. And for me, it's the smell of like this freshly laid asphalt. It brings me right back to college. And it's when I would walk to the testing center to go take an exam. And when I wasn't prepared, it was like I was walking to this firing squad. Have you guys ever had that? It like immediately brings me back. And even to this day, if I smell that asphalt, that's exactly where I go. And why is this significant? Why is this included? Why are the only two words in here for fire called charcoal fire? And I think what Jesus is doing here is he's reminding Peter the last time that he denied him. That smell that he had. That smell that just sticks with you. That's happening to Peter right now. Right? But what Jesus is saying is, I don't want you just to remember that. I want you to come back with me just a few days ago. I want you to remember that smell. I want you to remember how it felt back then. But what I want you to do at this point is I want you to remember that smell for a different reason now. I'm actually inviting you to breakfast. I'm on the shore right here, and you don't need to remember that charcoal fire for denying me. I want to create a different story for you. So listen closely to what Jesus says in verses 15 through 17. It says, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And you can just kind of picture Peter, this guilt and the shame that he's just sitting there with his head down and he's saying, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And again, he answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Unfortunately for John or for Peter, what we know of him is that he is best known, or one of the things he's best known for, is denying Jesus three times. Denying knowing Jesus three times before he was arrested. So what Jesus is doing here is saying, yeah, that smell that you had, that charcoal smell that, I'm going to remind you three times about what happened, but I don't think what he wants Peter to do is continue to pile on this guilt and this shame. Notice what he's saying after every time he says, do you love me? Feed my sheep. He's telling him, get out of that, right? And I think if it were me, that is where I would fall into this rut. Right? How would I be able to go on and evangelize? If we're really looking at Peter's life, how do we expect him to go back and evangelize when he just got done denying Jesus three times? How can he go on and live this evangelical life when he's just done that? And here's the thing. Here's what I love about what Jesus does, is Jesus knows that Peter cannot heal what's hidden. He knows this. He's bringing all this stuff. He can't avoid what he's trying to suppress. He can't avoid what he's trying to avoid. He went out on the boat to avoid all this stuff. Jesus shows up, brings all this stuff back up. not to pour onto this guilt and this shame, but just to sit there and say, there's something greater. You don't have to wallow in this. So we all develop these ruts from following the same path over and over again. But Jesus invites us, no matter how many times we feel like we screwed up, Jesus invites us into something different, into something new. And so I want to look at one more important piece to wrap this up. The next part of the story, it says, Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? And you just picture him saying, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. So let's stop there. Peter's absolutely wrecked about denying Jesus. He's absolutely wrecked. He recognizes that that was a Kairos moment in his life, that he could stand up and say, yes, I know him. Yes, I know Jesus. But he doesn't do that, right? So what he does is he doesn't let it change him. But Jesus invites him back into his life, into something, a potential defining moment for him. He gives Peter this second chance. The fact is that Jesus saw something in Peter that Peter could not see in himself. He had so much guilt and so much shame that he couldn't see past this. But the fact is that when Peter was talking about he was hurt, he failed to see what Jesus was doing. Why Peter was hurt is he was hurt because of all the guilt and shame. But what Jesus says to him, the very next thing after we learn that Peter was hurt, he says, feed my sheep. That's the very next comment out of his life. You see, Jesus is saying to him, I believe in you. I love you. I've forgiven you. You don't have to sit back, get into this rut that you had before. I love you. I believe in you. There's something so much greater for you beyond this. You're not just a fisherman. And then Jesus goes on to say, very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. Jesus knows that Peter's going to follow him. He just told him how he's going to die by glorifying God. He knows that he is going to follow him, right? But I don't want to miss the end of this. The two words at the end of this scripture is, he says, follow me. It's one thing to invite somebody to breakfast. I mean, I've gone out with Mark, my friend here, and we've gone out to dinner. I mean, those are times that I truly cherish. And that's important for Peter. But what Jesus says to him next is, follow me. You don't ask someone to follow you unless you truly forgive them, if you truly love them, if you truly believe in them. So remember when I was telling that story about Trey. So about 4 weeks ago, Fallon and I, we just kind of had it on our heart to get back involved with foster kids, and we don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it's respite care. We just don't know. We've been praying about it. And I was, and we met with Wendy. We hadn't seen Wendy in about 8 years. And so we met at a coffee shop. I think I saw you, Tom, there at the time. But we met, and we were talking with her. And the conversation was great. It was amazing to hear how many kids have been impacted by Mosaic. And I just felt compelled to say something to her about my story, to say something about what I've been struggling with. And it wasn't because I wanted her to make me feel better. I mean, I didn't even include the names. It was just like, get this off my chest. And at that moment, she says, oh, that's Trey and his brother. In my eyes, she knew exactly who it was. I mean, you think over the past 10 years, hundreds of kids, and she knew who I was talking about. And she says, friends of mine adopted them. They're doing great. And like, I started tearing up. It was this moment, this guilt and this shame. It was this weight had been lifted completely off my shoulders. And I just remember sitting there and saying, I just experienced God speaking through her and showing me this tremendous amount of grace and mercy. That had we gone back to that routine, had we not pursued foster care again because it's been on our hearts, we wouldn't have experienced that. I wouldn't have experienced that. And here's the thing. Jesus did the same thing to Peter. And Jesus will do the same for you. And I wonder if there are moments in your past that you look at that were defining moments, but you went back to that routine. And I wonder if you're like me and like Peter, where you feel this tremendous amount of guilt and this shame. And I wonder if this morning Jesus is building this fire for you to come around and talk about that and get a second chance or a fourth chance or a 14th chance, whatever that looks like. I wonder if you trust Jesus enough to sit there and believe that he forgives you, that he loves you. Because the thing is that we have hope in that. There's hope in getting beyond, getting out of that rut, sending out of that trajectory towards Scott's smiling face, right? We have that. We have that ability through God to have that hope. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to close with an exercise. I want you all to close your eyes here. And I want you to imagine that you've just had this Kairos moment, or maybe for some of you, it's over the past couple weeks that you've had this Kairos moment. And I want you to imagine that you're so tempted to go back to that routine, that you're so tempted to go back to that usual, that business, that whatever that looks like for you. I want you to imagine that you're going back to that same routine. Now I want you to imagine that you're sitting with Jesus and he's built a fire and you're sitting around and you're talking with Jesus. And Jesus starts inviting you into something. And I have two questions for you. Is what is he inviting you into? And will you go? Let's pray. Heavenly Father, God, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for allowing us to have a chance to come together. God, I thank you for everybody in this room, that no matter where they are, no matter what guilt, what shame they're carrying, God, that you love us enough to meet us where we are, that you love us enough to give us hope that whatever rut we're in, that we have another trajectory, that through a Kairos moment where we recognize you, that you're able to move in our lives, you're able to change things for us for the better, that the fear and the doubt that we have, God, that doesn't come from you. God, we love you. And it's in your son's name we pray. Amen.